Joining me now on the phone is Dan Montgomery. He's the president and COO of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. Dan, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, absolutely, Rick. Thanks for having me. Great to be here on this nice, cool morning. Sorry, I can't see your new digs, too, by the way.
Well, the digs, I will tell you, the view is very impressive, and it's thankfully, it's even though it's a lot of glass, there is a nice, distinct chill here in the studio.
Oh,
so I'm
even better.
Yes, and I even made sure to turn the lights off just to alleviate any thought of heat. But
smart.
Well, speaking of heat, does the Janus case put heat on public employees' unions in their future?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I feel two ways about it. Just like Janus is sort of a two-faced god from Roman mythology, I think there's two things here. One is it's not good, right? And you heard Elizabeth Warren say what she said, and there's been a lot of, you know, if we had our druthers, this would not be the case. And I think one way to think about that, especially for your listeners, is we live in a country, the United States is the most anti-union developed country in the world. And maybe if a lot of other things were different, I think a lot of us would think, okay, this is, you know, just fine or whatever. But remember this, in 1980 or so, Canada and the United States had both the same amount of unionized workers in their countries, about 30% of the workforce. In now, today, we've got totally, on a good day, maybe 11% of the workforce in the United States unionized, and almost all of it's in the vast majority in the public sector. Canada, still at 30%. Now, it's not because of NAFTA. It's not because of, you know, all the globalization. Canada has been subject to those same forces. It's because of law. It's because of the extreme rightward bent of American law, which you saw again here, you know, in this week's Supreme Court ruling. So, I mean, those things hurt, and that's a problem. So that's why I think this is not a good addition to American law and labor history. But on the other hand, you know, we're adding members. Our union is adding members of the AFT. Our national union is bigger than it's ever been. We're adding members here in Illinois all the time. You know, we just had the graduate employees at the University of Chicago had just voted to join us. We're, you know, up and down the state adding new members. The charter schools in the city, you see those people are organizing right and left. So people want to be in a union and they want to be active. Even, you know, you look at those mostly southern states from this spring, the Red for Ed movement, right? West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, Kentucky, North Carolina, and so on. Those places, in some of those places, collective bargaining is illegal. It's illegal. And they certainly they had no fair share laws in effect. So that didn't stop the teachers from organizing and taking to the streets and actually having a lot of public support. I think that's just the mode we're in right now with the extreme rightward conservative turn the nation's taken.
Is there, in your view, kind of a difference when we speak about public employees' unions that there's a differentiation in some people's minds about a government union is one thing, but a teachers union is a different thing?
You know, you may be right about that. I mean, it could be, but that's one of the things we always try to point out, you know. And in fact, the IFT, we represent a few thousand public employees who are not in schools, but they're under every constitutional officer, including Bruce Rauner. And, you know, I think it's important for the public to realize that teachers are public employees and that the public employees that they encounter, whether it's, you know, at the Secretary of State or it's at the, you know, in the Department of Transportation, the people plowing the roads, a lot of nurses and healthcare folks in public hospitals and things like that, they're doing important work that serves the public. And it's just, again, with fewer people in unions in the United States, used to be back in the day, right, everybody knew someone in a union. Maybe your parents were in a union, right? One in four workers almost was in a union. And now that number is down. So we've got to work harder than ever to, like, make sure people understand the value of unions. A recent Pew poll came out and said, you know, the public opinion about unions is more favorable than at any time in, like, the last 20 years. And I think you're seeing the results of that. And, your previous, it was really interesting. I started listening when Greg talked, and then I listened to the fellow from the retail merchant. Yeah, Rob. And, it's like you get a big picture of what's happening in the economy in this country. And there have been sweeping changes. But the thing that I think, you know, most people would realize or agree with is that everybody's always going to want representation. Everybody's always going to want to improve their life and their lot. And so there's always going to be a labor movement, and there's always going to be unions. And the fact of the matter is, if you did a line graph of wages in the United States from, say, the middle part of the 20th century, it's a long, slow slide down, right, where the value of wages is going down. If you plot the number of union members over that, it's the exact same line. So as union density goes down, wages go down for everybody. And I think it's one of the most important, one of the most critical issues we have in our economy, which is this huge income inequality gap, which delivers you people like Bruce Rauner going after workers and their unions.
We have a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, Rick, you were kind of spot on when you kind of making the distinction between public unions and private, and I just my position real quick. I do not support public sector unions, and particularly if you look at Illinois, some of the negotiations that have occurred for wages and benefits is sometimes beyond what taxpayers can afford, beyond the budget. But see, this is what the thing is: you're stuck if you're a taxpayer, you have to pay it. Real quick, with the private sector, when auto workers union were negotiating for wages that raised the prices of the cars where it wasn't affordable, I was able to choose foreign cars. See, that's the whole thing. If private sector companies continue to raise their wages and benefits where their product is costing the consumer too much, in most instances, we can say we're not going to buy that. Then they have to be really. But in the public sector, you are stuck with it. So I supported the ruling. And lastly, he said that most people want to belong to a union. So if they really do, then they should be willing to pay the dues. I just don't think they should be coerced, but I was happy about the ruling. Thanks,
okay,
guys.
Ron, thank you. Dan?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you just have to look around to see how the public supports what unions are fighting for. And in our world, in teachers' unions, I say this all the time. I don't know a parent who wakes up in the morning and says, gosh, I wish my son or my daughter gets to be in a class with more students today. Or, gee, I hope my kid goes to school and there's a new teacher with fewer qualifications. Or that my kid's teacher is making less money. That just doesn't happen. People want the services of a good, healthy, robust government and public structures and education and roads and police and all those things, fire, right? I guess no one likes to pay any taxes, but, you know, we live in a democracy where we have to collectively think about what happens, what's best for us. And, I think the evidence is clear. People want these kinds of services. Public polling shows that the vast majority of Americans say, you look at the Ed for Ed movement in those states we talked about, the public supports those people. They support the efforts of teachers, not only to make more money, but to do what they're really doing, which is saying, we can't disinvest from our schools. Those states where you had those broad teacher movements and walkouts and things like that, my gosh, you have such dramatic disinvestment in higher education and in K-12 public education, and it's not good for the country. And we're reaping those benefits. And to his other point, look, the deck is stacked against public and private union workers in the United States by virtue of the law. And even Rob kind of made that point, but he made it from a different point of view, right? As if the unions only have to go to the government. Well, guess what the government's doing? The government is going against unions constantly in this country. So, you know, we are kind of have our backs against the wall in terms of statutory framework in this country, but it's not going to stop people. We're going to keep organizing. We will keep organizing. No one was ever forced to join a union. The fair share fees, which were legal in this country for years, that framework was adopted by a conservative court and over the years had been upheld by conservative courts. But, you know, we're in a very extreme time now, and you've got now, with Kennedy retiring, the prospect of American life being changed from the sort of far right-wing vantage point for generations to come, and it's concerning.
We're speaking with Dan Montgomery, President and COO of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. I'm speaking with Dan Montgomery, President of the Illinois Federation of Teachers. We're talking about the ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court last Wednesday, known as Janus v. AFSCME, which affects the public sector employees, that non-union members do not have to pay what was known as fair share fees, covering the collective bargaining process of public employees unions. Dan, in a story I've got in the paper, in the Tribune today, I talk about the political effects, and one of these is the fact that a number of unions have talked about maybe a retrenchment of political activity in exchange for more member management. Is that what we're likely to see?
Not from my vantage point, actually. Here's what I've seen. We've known this ruling is coming, right? We expected, once Gorsuch got on the court, we knew, because of how they had ruled in a previous case called Friedrichs that was, you know, deadlocked 4-4 after Scalia passed away. We knew what was happening. So, you know, we said, look, we gotta roll up our sleeves, gotta make sure we have members sign in union cards, have one-on-one conversations, just to sort of re-engage and remember, you know, get our people to recall, like, why are we in a union, right? Why are we doing this? Well, that has gone gangbusters, and we've seen more members. We have a few fair share members in the K-12, especially that education sector, very few of them. Most of those locals are 100%, always have been. Some of the places where it's harder to reach members, you know, that's where we had some fair share, where they're harder to find, frankly. But, our fair share numbers went way down. Our membership went way up. And you know what, like, really tellingly to me, our voluntary political contributions have gone way up. We have a very democratic process for endorsements and things like that. We call them PAC meetings. They're regional around the state. This last primary, Rick, the primary season, where we had all these regional PACs around the state where rank and file members go, they meet legislators who want our endorsement, they talk to them, they, you know, quiz them. We had a 600% increase in the number of members going to that, over our sort of regular historical baseline. We went from a few dozen around the state to hundreds. And then I can tell you, just since Wednesday, the level of anger from our members at what the court has done, what Bruce Rauner did, because they know that this was a Rauner effort. It began just a few days after he took office. And he has said, like, one of my top priorities is hurting working people. And they're ticked off about it, and rightly so. So I see a massive upswing in political engagement, frankly. We are going to have to spend more time doing that internal organizing, you know, talking to people. That's true. But all good unions have always done that. That's my feeling. That's my background. That was my union in Skokie in Niles Township, where I taught high school English. Like, we always did that, you know. Everybody knew that they were in the union and why. So good unions do that, and we have most of our unions doing that anyway. So I think you're going to see from a lot of public sector unions a huge increase in political engagement.
In political engagement, not necessarily dollar-wise, but in people-wise?
Yeah. Well, I think both, actually. People are waking up in this moment here in the United States. What's happening when you have a governor of a blue state, a real union tradition state? You know, I was down in Mount Olive this week, which is just south of.
I know where you're going.
Sure,
go ahead and explain.
Right, you know where I'm going.
Yep.
But Mount Olive, the grave of Mother Jones, the great union organizer and troublemaker from the United Mine Workers, and it's the only union cemetery in the United States. She's buried there. And they still, you know, United Mine Workers still get buried there. And you look around and you look at the names on all the tombstones there, and they're Dutch and English and French and German and Italian and Czech and Polish, Scottish, they're immigrant names, right? And that's the sort of history of this country, of how we began, and labor has always been a huge part of that. So I think there's a special sense of that in this state, you know, Bruce Rauner, to have Bruce Rauner try to lead the attack on workers and unions in Illinois is just, it's really sad and kind of reprehensible. And I guess he thinks it's going to be his big legacy. I think he's going to find that it was one of the many things that helped usher him out of office from our members' point of view. I think that's, you know, that's the direction we're going with people power.
Well, and I don't want to relitigate the 2014 election, but certainly the governor, even before he got elected, his feelings were well known about what he viewed about the power of public employees unions, and particularly the Chicago Teachers Union.
That always amazed me when people talk about, like, union bosses, like that was Rauner's thing, and the power of public employee unions. And, we all look at each other, we go, God, I wish we had this power that they're talking about, you know? When I became president of this union, the first thing that happened is a huge bill was plopped down in front of me by, quote-unquote, reformers who had written this bill to undo due process for teachers. And it's like, what kind of power do we have that they're writing bills, you know, with the help of certain legislators, you know, on their own? So, like, that, to me, that's a sort of mythology. That's something that anti-union forces like to promote. And that was certainly Rauner. You know, one of the first things Rauner did when he was elected, it was like within a week of taking office, he went to federal court and he sued the Illinois School for the Deaf, the teachers at the Illinois School for the Deaf, and a lot of other places, a lot of other unions. But our teachers there, we represent those teachers, like 65 teachers in Jacksonville. It's this incredible institution. They're highly certified. You know, those people, like the students at that school, have many deficits. Sometimes they're very profound. They're not just related to hearing. And these are like some of the most qualified people in the country how to deal with this special population. And Bruce Rauner wanted to just destroy their union. Like, that was on his agenda. Right. And then he has the gall to turn around and say, oh, I'm the education governor, or I'm for working people, you know, without a G. And it's so hypocritical. And I think people now see through that. I think people are sick of that in the public sphere, and they want some genuine help.
Well,
so that's what our members are working for.
We will absolutely see how this plays out, both short-term and long-term. Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, as always, thank you so much for joining me.
Rick, thanks very much. Stay cool.